C2PR. Number 2A.
Well, we had on our program that we would take the chapter on prayer, but not the way exactly as I have done it 30 years ago nearly in London, and where we had taped it, and many of you have listened to those tapes. And if you have done it, naturally it's a great help for following what we are doing this week. But I want really to stress the importance of text interpretation. And why that? You know, one can always, as a teacher or lecturer, can inspire a class. Well, I say one can always, that depends really. But at least this is not so difficult. If one has a vision of something, one can give it to the others and just take the class up on cloud 9 and then afterwards drop them. Now, this may be necessary at the beginning in order to show people the beauty of what we are studying, but then comes a point where we really feel, or where I feel especially, that the students should be able to be alone, not alone with God only, but alone with the textbook. That the students should be able to read the textbook the way it was intended to be written, so as to read it structurally and not atomistically. I think we agree to a great extent that mostly we have been reading the textbook atomistically. Here a sentence, there a sentence, here a sentence that inspires, there a sentence that gives us hope and comfort. But actually, the textbook is a textbook. It's not a collection of, what do you call them, of nice sentences, of, what is the term, you know it?
Aphorisms.
You know, my mentality already pretty well, aphorisms. But to read it or study it structurally. And this seems still to be a great difficulty for the student. And so I would like this week to train with the text of prayer this consciousness how to read structurally, how to see the system in the text. And this is perhaps a bit more laborious, not so inspiring in the first place. But once one can do that and is able to interpret the text structurally, then you will see that the inspiration is much bigger than without it. So it's just a method that we have to learn in order to win more than what we had before. And this brings us to the whole question of interpretation. Now, I could easily give you, say, a lecture of about 4 hours on interpretation, like at the university, a nice thesis, so to say, on text interpretation. But I feel that this may be a bit too difficult, that it may perhaps be too abstract to begin with. So that what I will try to do it in pieces, so to say. Hear a little bit about interpretation, what interpretation means, and then take a text and work with the text, and then go back and see now how can we look at it from the point of view of interpretation, so that only along the next days we'll get the whole picture of what interpretation implies, instead of that I talk a whole day, so to say, as a theory, and you don't quite see what I'm driving at. So right now I just want to introduce the point of interpretation a little bit. The term interpretation is a very important term in the Christian Science textbook. And actually it is interesting to take the concordance and look up all the references on interpretation, interpret, and so on that Mrs. Eddy uses in the textbook, in prose works, and so on. And as you do that, or as we do that, we find that interpretation has many angles, many aspects. It's not just one thing. It's something that has to be looked at very carefully from various standpoints, and that the term means quite different things. Let me start with the highest sense of interpretation that we find in the textbook, and that is always that sense that interpretation must come from God. That interpretation starts with God, and not we interpreting something. That actually the whole revelation which Mrs. Eddy had for our time, for the time of science, for the age of science, is actually that she could caught the revelation as an interpretation of principle in its science. That's her great contribution to her age and to our age. That she would say that the divine principle of the universe interprets the universe. You can see that interpretation always starts out with God. Actually, very seldom she says God. Usually she says principle. So that the divine principle of the universe reveals itself to us as an interpretation of that divine principle. These are such simple statements, and yet if we look at it, they are so deep in its impact. She says furthermore that that divine principle interprets itself through mind, capital M. That only through the immortal mind really we can understand the interpretation of principle. So we see it has nothing to do with our mind, that we have to be very clever and very academically schooled and so on to read the textbook, that is not so. That the divine principle really interprets itself through the immortal mind or immortal mind reading. And so the principle interprets the universe, including man. All right. But these are just a few statements. When one goes further and sees, what does Mrs. Eddy say? How this divine principle interprets itself, then you find a lot of references that say very clearly that that divine principle interprets itself through science. Through science. Again, this is a very simple statement. You have heard it perhaps 1,000 times. The question is only, do we see the implication of it? And do we draw the implication of it for our daily study and investigation of being? So she would say that science is that which is interpreting the divine principle of being. That it is science that interprets the principle of harmony of the universe. These are her renderings, that science interprets God and man. It's always science that interprets. It's never that we interpret. So the very first thing we have to see is that we see that interpretation always starts from principle, that it needs the medium, so to say, of a science to interpret itself, to explain itself, the medium of science, and that only through that medium God interprets himself really to bring out his idea. This is a reference from Miscellaneous Writings, where she says, God's interpretation of himself. Can you see, it's different than before, when she said, well, that divine principle interprets the universe and man. That divine principle also interprets God himself, what God is, not only the universe and man. And so God's interpretation of himself furnishes man with the only suitable or true idea of him. So it shows that the highest sense of interpretation is that we can see how principle interprets principle, how principle is his own self-interpretation. Well, we can ask ourselves, what on earth would that interpretation be when principle interprets itself, or when science interprets the principle? Therefore, we can see that what we get there would be the whole system of science, the whole structure of that principle. That actually the highest sense of interpretation would be to see that principle interprets through its science the whole inner structure of that principle. Interpretation means interpretare, namely to put in between, you see, to show what is involved in a term, in a concept. So that if we just say, well, God is principle, we actually don't know very much, because we don't know what principle is. What constitutes a principle? What is the nature of a principle? What makes a principle to be a principle? And this is actually that very point that was in the forefront of Dorley's thinking, that he began to see that that is not enough that we say God is principle, because everybody has its own sense of principle. Principle must be shown in its interpretation as a principle. And only a science can do that, because principle is a scientific term. It's not a religious term, it's not an emotional term, it's a term of science, you see? Therefore, that principle must interpret itself as its inner science. Therefore, John Dolly began to see that therefore we have to see that inner structure of a principle as a science. And you know more or less the history of it. I just pinpoint it, that he could see, okay, God is that principle of being, and that principle is one. That principle is one. But as long as we just see that principle as one, it is not meaning very much. It has no great inner meaning. And therefore, he began to see that this infinite one can be explained through its categories of the principle. That's the very first breaking down of the concept of just an amorphous one into the categories of that one. And so he began to see that the categories of that one were the seven, the nature of God. We have the four sides of the holy city, which is the operation of the nature of God. So that we have the nature of God, the operation of God, and that he could see, because that principle is one, it will have to be a principle that is applicable in every circumstances, therefore on every level of experience, on the highest down to the lowest level of experience. Therefore, it could see that the third category were the levels of science, the four levels, science itself, divine science, absolute Christian science, Christian science. And in this way, he began to see the inner structure of a principle. That principle interprets itself, you see, through those three big categories. So, if we want to know anything about the revelation of God and its great interpretation, we mustn't think in the first place, how does God come to me and interprets itself to an individual situation in which I am? This is not the first big point. The very first thing is that our consciousness is first educated into seeing these great categories of being. Then we know that from this very big category, we could see, because principle is one, see, that's always the central focal point, because principle is one, these categories would blend with each other. That they are not in separate compartments, like in four different drawers, but that they are blending, that wherever one category is, all the other categories are also. And this gave a second hierarchy in the interpretation, namely that we could see how these categories blend. So we have seen the seven. We have seen that the seven synonymous terms are not just seven objects in seven different drawers you can take out and put the other one in and so on, but that they blend and you get a finer network of 7 by 7. And at the same time, one could see that the four blend with each other, so that it is again a nice network of 4 by 4, like the 16th chapter of the textbook. And one could see that even the levels would blend, that they always would demand the translation from one level to the next level, so that every aspect of being, from the highest aspect down to the lowest aspect of error, that everything is interpreted within that one. That there is nothing outside this infinite one. Nothing remains uninterpreted by the infinite one. And so in this way, through this further and further intra-reflection, we get a further and further, a more detailed, a finer interpretation of being. You see, this must have been lying at the core of Mrs. Eddy's revelation. She may not have been aware of it right from the beginning. Actually, we know that she wasn't aware of it right from the beginning. But over 40 years, she was refining that. She became more transparent for the purity of that system with their categories. And therefore, she changed the textbook until finally, at the end of her life, She presented a textbook that reflected God's or principles interpretation of itself through the categories of science. Because we know from your classes, we know that each chapter is built up in the seven. So we have the first category of the seven, that the whole textbook is built up on the four, and that the whole textbook has levels, that it is speaking mostly about the level of Christian Science and absolute Christian Science, and here and there of divine science, and in some cases, in very rare cases, on the level of science itself. So that actually the presentation of the textbook is just the symbolization in words, in symbols of terms and words, what is the inner structure of being. So we can see that if we have the textbook, that we should actually, first of all, and mainly, see that structure. Because that is God interpreting himself as the idea of himself. Now, at this point we know that this is so. But the point is naturally that we should be able to prove it, at least to ourselves, that it is so. It's not enough that I have come along and have said, look here, the textbook has a structure, and I show you the structure of the 7x7, the 4x4, and the levels in it, and that is a wonderful, systematic, symmetrical layout of the nature of being, and because Max said it, it must be so. What I dearly love, and you know how already in my first presentation of the structure book 30 years ago, I was saying that I present it so that the students themselves can get hold of it and develop it and let it unfold. That was always my inner longing, that everyone would be trained so much into the system of Christian Science that he himself can go home and be alone with the book and read the book and see the whole symphony in that book all laid out in the harmony of being and seeing therein really the whole rhythm of those categories in a wonderful way. The question therefore could arise, why can't I see that in the textbook? The question you may have had, or you should have, you must have, is if I sit down and take the textbook and read a chapter like physiology or the science of being, I should be able to read that text structurally and not atomistically. You see? And only then, really, do we understand the textbook. As long as we don't understand it in its science, therefore in its structure, we don't understand it. We read it. And we get some atomistic insights into being. They may be lovely, they may help us at the moment, but that's not what this textbook is here for. And it's limited, and it will take us just so far and no further. I always like to think, what on earth is the ordinary Christian Scientist reading in that textbook? I know those people, they are earnest, they are devoted, they have read that textbook that is only 600 pages for 50 years. And yet, Do they know what they read? Do they see the whole web of consistency, the whole that interwoven sense of all the ideas into one web without seam and rent, where every statement supports all other statements? Can they see that? No. And this is a tragic. Think of it, if we would study chemistry and we would have a textbook on chemistry, and after 50 years we still would have to read the same book on chemistry and still don't know actually what it is all about. Does another science teach that way? Does another science investigate the subject that way? I certainly don't. Now, it is an important question to ask, why is not everyone able to do that? To read the textbook in the way perhaps I read it now, I've read it for the last 20, 30 years, I never read sentences. I never read sentences. I read the sentences, but what I hear are not the sentences. I hear something very different. I always hear the whole structure shining through. I always see relationships. Relationships of the beginning and the end of the chapter, the relationship of the chapter to the whole textbook, relationship from paragraph to paragraph. You see the relationships of the seven with the four and the four. So, what makes one able to read the textbook that way? Well, we know that the ordinary way of reading doesn't work. That I first want to show what the unscientific method is, that the unscientific method of reading it is if we approach that textbook religiously. That doesn't work, because it's principle interpreting itself as a science, so religion doesn't do it. Our religious sense will not unlock it. We cannot approach it inspirationally and say, I want to get an inspiration out of it. I want to be inspired by it. You can approach that way. It does work here and there, but it only goes as far and no further. Or we can approach it atomistically, as we said, or metaphysically, or as arguments, taking a statement and taking that for arguments and using it as arguments. All that really doesn't work. We need a scientific approach.